take just a moment to begin with tonight to again express to the eldership my appreciation for the opportunity that Shelby and I've had to be with you this weekend. I also want to tell David how much I appreciate the great work that he's doing at Creekwood. I hear so many wonderful things, David, about your work here, and I appreciate that so much. You teamed up now with Eric, and I think that's a great team to work for the Lord. I also want to thank those that provided the meal today. It was certainly second to none. You couldn't have gone out with $100 in your pocket and found a better meal anywhere in Mobile, Alabama, or this county than what we had today. That was just absolutely great. Good to see Albert feeling well to lead singing again, and Jonathan always does his good work, and I appreciate that. Wouldn't it be so great if we always felt like doing what we know we ought to be doing? Wife says to the husband, "Honey, the yard needs mowing and the garbage needs taken out." And he says, "Great. That's exactly what I've been wanting to do." And then the husband says to the wife, "Honey, will you iron my favorite shirt? And also, I noticed that the bathrooms need cleaning." And she says, "How did you know that that's what I've been wanting to do all day long?" Well, if life works that smoothly, we would not have nearly as many problems as we do. Life has many uncanny ways of hurling us into situations of where we are called upon to act better than we feel like doing. Following your feelings often leaves unimportant things or important things left undone. And the result of all this is that we get somewhat aggravated at one another, and we lash out with devastating results. The good news is that you can make things right when they've gone wrong by acting better than you feel. An example of that: a manager of a fast food store told his young employee that attending the counter, he said, "You got to be more friendly than what you are. You snap at people, and you need to be more friendly and cordial and respectful to our customers. Besides, they're always right, you know." And that worked for a little time, and then he kind of reverted right back to this same old bad attitude. So we corrected him the second time, the third time. The third time he got a little bit strong with the boy. And the boy said, "I'm friendly. They just can't see it." Well, the manager was right, because actions speak louder than words. Let me offer you 8 suggestions tonight on how to act better than you feel. I've preached sermons here in the time past of water the flowers and not the weeds, and I threw those out to a few people today, and they still remember that sermon. And then another one, you're going to have to shake it off and step up. And some remember that one. But I believe this will be one that some points in it that you will remember, because they just kind of click inside our brains. Just number one suggestion, just do it. You know, we talk about it. Just get in there and do it. I don't know about you, but I don't particularly like bald, slimy okra. And I don't know if I like raw oysters or not. I've never been drunk enough to drink any. But I don't like anything that I don't have any control over. But there's a way to learn to eat slick, bald okra. And that is, convince yourself, men, that it's beneficial to your health, and it'll help grow hair on your bald head. Just convince yourself of that, and you'll like slick okra. Well, eat it and act like you like it, and lo and behold, before long, you'll begin to like slick boiled okra. The attitude to want to like it, plus the action to seal that commitment, will work every time if we do not give up too soon. If I ate and drank only what I felt like eating and drinking, then my diet would be payday candy bars and Sprite or coconut pie and iced tea. But in the interest of nutrition, I've learned to eat foods that have a little bit more nutritional value than what my diet I would love for it to be. I remember going to Trinidad, my first time over there. I had a hard time with it because their number one meat that they served was goat meat. And they put curry in the goat meat, and that turned it green. Green goat. That's not too enticing to me, because we had to walk everywhere we went, and the open sewers were the same color the goat was. And that just kind of dampened my appetite. Also, we went to the Holy Lands, and there on the breakfast bar were fish, whole fish, with their eyes still in. Now, that didn't sound too good to me. I've never been to China, but there's some people that go over there to teach, came back and told me the story, said on their menu there, squid, octopus, eel, dog, and baby sparrows that you have to eat whole, crunch the bones and all. Well, a lot of us have different diets, different foods that we like and some that we don't like. While we were, before we built a new house in Hamilton, we had a small house up there where we'd stay when I'd be up there in a gospel meeting. And our next door neighbor, her name was Ann, one morning she came down to the house and knocked on the door, and I went to the door pretty early that morning. And she was just a-crying. I said, Ann, what in the world is wrong? I knew she had two boys, and one of them had just been, got out of high school and went straight into the Marines. And she said, I just worried all night about my boy. Said the only thing he would eat at home is hamburgers and Coca-Cola. And that would be morning, noon, and night. Hamburgers, potatoes, and Coca-Cola. And said, I'm afraid they won't give him hamburgers, potatoes, and Coca-Cola. I said, Ann, I've never been in the armed services, but I've heard a lot of people say, when you walk about 20 miles with a 100-pound pack on your back, you'll eat anything they put before you, and you'll learn to like it. Well, you know, we're all like them. Sometimes we just have to just do it, right? I mean, we don't like it, and it make you act better than you feel. Just go ahead and do it. Number two, fake it till you make it. Well, you say, is that not hypocritical? Well, fake it till you make it. Well, it's not. So you're a hypocrite when you deceive others into thinking that you're what you never intend to become. Like a politician starts attending church services and never gone before to get a vote. That's hypocritical. Or a salesman who attends a church service because he might be able to make a better sale. But just attending a church service for personal gain is hypocritical. The reason for attending a worship service is to worship God, right? And number two, to become a better Christian. But acting out a part on the stage of life, desiring to adopt the noble qualities of that character that you're acting, springs from genuine motives. And that is not hypocritical. Alcoholic Anonymous, and I have a friend of mine who has not drank a drop in over 25 years, and he's still an alcoholic, he said, once always an alcoholic. And anyway, he told me these things. He said they have a motto that they encourage the other members to try to succeed from drinking, and that is fake it till you make it. Now, these people are using that term fake in a phony or hypocritical sense. Their intent is to fake the feeling that they don't want to drink one day at a time. And acting as if they are recovered alcoholics until they form the habit of sobriety. So they fake it till they make it. And then it's hypothesis, not hypocrisy. The hypothesis or the assumption is that if you keep doing and acting as if you like to do what you do not want to do, the time will come when you'll like and want to do that. So it's easier to act yourself into a better way of feeling than to feel yourself into a better way of acting. You don't sing because you're happy, but you're happy because you sing. See, happiness is a choice. Behavior will ultimately change your feelings. If you're depressed, get your mind off yourself. Now, some people have proven this that by my observation of them. Navel gazers are seldom happy. Those people with a sad, long face, a mule face, looking down like that all the time, gazing at their navel down here, they're hardly ever happy people. You know, do things to bless others. If you go through the motion, you will soon get the emotion that goes with that. So try this. Don't ask someone, how are you feeling today? I've learned not to do that. And most preachers have learned that lesson. How are you doing or how are you feeling today? Because when they get through with you, you're going to be depressed yourself. But rather say, what have you been doing today? What have you been doing? Emphasize action. That is external, thinking about others instead of feelings which are internal, thinking about self. For example, when a mother is awakened in the middle of the night by a crying baby, what mother will say now, honey, I'm not going to get up and change your diaper, even though you're wet, because I don't feel like it. If I got up with an attitude like I have right now, I'd be hypocritical. Well, no mother would do that. A mother will fake it till she makes it, right? She'll fake it. And she gets up, she changes the diaper, she feeds, burps that little darling who smiles and goos and hopefully goes back to sleep in a little while. Now, how does that mother feel now when she gets back into bed? She feels great. You see, a person always feels better on the inside when they act responsibly on the outside. Most of the good in the world is done by those who don't feel like doing these good works. They just do it because it's the right thing to do. They act responsibly, and as a result of that, they feel better afterwards. Just like making a hospital visit. There's times that I don't really want to get up, get myself dressed, and go make a hospital visit. Well, then once I go, and that person starts talking in a kind way to me and a very appreciative, then I feel good. I'm the one that gets a blessing out of making a hospital visit. It's me that receives the blessing from that. And then, number four, stop waiting for the urge to hit you. The odds are great that you'll never do what we are supposed to do if you wait on the urge. I like the story about the lumberjack. He and the axe were standing up against a tree. He leaned back, and the axe standing there leaned up against the tree. And somebody passed by, and they said, "Let me see what a real young lumberjack can do. Let me see you cut that tree down." And the lumberjack's reply was, "I will when I work up a sweat." Well, there's no valve to turn on sweat. Sweat comes when the work begins. Neither is there a valve to turn on a feeling. You're not going to feel great just by saying, "I'm going to feel great today." But you can will an action that will make you feel great in the end. By nature, I'm not an early morning person. Now, my father-in-law gets up before daylight. They finally talked him in to sit and getting up at 4:30 in the morning, get up at 5:30 in the morning. Now, I don't like to be around people that are early morning people. I'm not. Those that get up, Shelby gets up singing every morning. I don't want you to talk to me at 10 o'clock because it takes me to 10 o'clock in the morning to find out whether I'm sick or not. So I'm not an early morning person. When the alarm goes off, I throw out one leg, and if it stays, I throw the other one out, and then I throw one arm and then the other arm, and I push and get myself setting up, and finally I get standing upright, all the body parts standing up. Blood begins to circulate, and I feel downright proud of myself. I don't like getting up, but I feel good once I've gotten up. So I'm sure I'm the only one like that here tonight. Successful people do not set out to work because they're inspired, but rather they become inspired because they do something that's worthwhile. That's what gives them the inspiration. They don't waste time waiting for inspiration. Work begins with perspiration, and then that brings on inspiration. Here's a Sunday sermon for you. I was where? Somewhere. And I saw this on the church sign. Aspire to inspire before you expire. It's a good saying, isn't it? You know, live like that. Stop waiting for the urge. Just do it. Just do it. Get to moving. And then number five, listen to your thinker. Right attitudes and feelings will follow right thinking. God didn't give you a feeler to tell you if it's right or wrong. He designed the human brain to do that kind of thinking for you. Your feelings rejoice when your brain has done what it ought to do. Your feelings rejoice because it understands that your thinker knows more than the feelers know. So if you listen to your feelings, I promise you one thing. You'll blow your diet. You bring on failure to your job. You distract you from your goals. And oftentimes it will destroy your marriage. Couples go to marriage counselor day after day. Marriage in trouble. Why? Because they entered marriage based on feelings rather than their thinking. Based on erotic love or maybe phileo love and not agape love. And they soon learn that the good feelings of a romantic impulse is not an adequate substitute for the positive actions of real love. So in evaluating a future mate, we must listen to our thinkers instead of our feelers. Behavior changes attitude. To change the heart and mind of men, we must change their behavior. Counselors tell people that are fighting couples, to list all the good they can about their mate. I know that's hard when you're fighting. Well, you could say, well, he's a good fighter or she's a good fighter, but that's not what he's after. Emphasize the good, not the bad. Then work on helping your mate fully develop all the good. Act that out for them. Compliment the good in your mate. Never criticize the negative. But what do we normally do? We emphasize the negative and forget about the good that they're going on. So act it out, and you will see a change in not their attitude, but your attitude. And the act as if attitude will soften the harshness of a relationship. And by acting better than you feel toward your mate, you will can help heal a broken relationship. This acting better than you feel would transcend and transform our own nature. Here's another sermon. Do what is unnatural until it becomes natural for you to do. Do what's unnatural until it becomes natural for you to do. And then number six, and I love this one. Learn the snowball theory. One person doing the right thing, acting better than they feel, just doing it whether they like it or not, can set in motion an avalanche of good things. This is the snowball theory. So somebody has to get the ball rolling eventually. In a mining camp in California, the only woman in the camp, needless to say, had a bad reputation, ill repute, and she had a baby. And during the course of having that baby and a short time afterwards, she died. And the only ones to care for that baby was a bunch of men, the miners. So she had placed the baby in a crude wooden box, just a bunch of old rags the baby was covered in. Not fit for a baby, they thought. So they sent one of the miners on a mule 80 miles to Sacramento to buy a rosewood cradle. And they placed the baby in the cradle in amongst all those filthy rags. And they said, that's not fitting either. So they sent the same man back to Sacramento 80 miles for some lacy, frilly clothes. And they dressed the baby in these lacy, frilly clothes and placed her in that rosewood cradle. And then they noticed that the floor was filthy and nasty, so they scrubbed it, cleaned it up. They whitewashed the walls and ceilings, placed some curtains on the windows. And the baby needed sleep, so the men stopped their rough language and rowdy behavior. And when the weather permitted, they would take the cradle up to the mines. And they cleaned the area around the mines and planted some flowers. And finally, the men improved their personal appearance, and the birth of the baby and the sense of responsibility and obligation had snowballed and transformed a rough, roaring mining camp into a very attractive place in which to live and work. But somebody has to get the ball rolling, and this is where you and I come in. We had a bus ministry for 7 years in Hamilton, Alabama. And one of those routes we're trying to get established was up north of our town. And that's the guy that we put on that bus. His dad was born and reared. He had a lot of family members up in that area. Thought he'd be the right one. So run and go up there with he and his crew with an empty bus. Sunday morning, bring an empty bus back. Sunday night, same thing, bring an empty bus back. Wednesday night, same thing, bring an empty bus back. Well, we were already discouraged, you know, after a few weeks. But Ron said, I believe that there are people up there that'll be interested. So he kept running that route several months, hardly any success at all. And one day, he came in to an elders' deacons' meeting. He said, I've come across this old couple, they are living in an old school bus body. And they are cooking on a wood stove under a tree. Now, they're building an old house out here out of just scrap lumber that they could pick up at maybe one of the mobile home plants, where they'd take a 2x4 and shave off an inch of it, make a 2x3 to make the trailer not hardly as heavy. And they would take those 1x2 little board strips. And I've seen this with my own eyes. They take old rusty nails and nail 4 of those together to make a 2x4 stud. That's how they had framed that house. He had a bad back. He had fallen and broken his back years past. And here she was, almost 70 years of age, up on top of that house, putting the rafters on that house. And it was later than this in the year, and bad weather's going to come soon. So Ron said, we need to go up there and get this old couple in that house. So we got together less than $2,000 and bought what other materials that was going to be needed and got those at discount prices because of we told them what it was for and they gave us a good price on it. We went up there and worked 2 or 3 Saturdays and we got the top on that and got some siding on the outside and put some wallboard on the inside, paneling. Got some insulation, windows, doors. Put some linoleum on the floors and got them a coal or wood-burning stove and put it in there and moved the old couple in. And you know what happened? Ron got the snowball rolling and the rest of us got involved in it. We filled that bus, and we had to buy a second bus to put in that same area. That goes to show you, but somebody had to get the ball rolling. Now, I noticed today back here, Meals on Wheels, 120,000 meals. I can remember the story. I wasn't here at that time when a group from Sage Avenue went to the church in Madison, Tennessee, Brother Ira North's congregation up there. And they came back with an idea, and Sister Nellie Butts, along with maybe some others, wanted to start a Meals on Wheels program here. But somebody rolled the ball in. They got the snowball rolling, and it's still rolling. I love the story. I love these little corny things. This ostrich was moved in next door to the rooster and his hen house. And the rooster got up on the fence post to crow, and in the process of crowing, he excited the ostrich, and that ostrich laid the biggest egg that that rooster had ever seen. He got fluttered over there and rolled that egg through a hole in the fence and called all of the hens together. He said, "Now, ladies, I'm not criticizing you, but I just want you to see what they're doing other places." So you go off different places. You get ideas. Come in and roll them in. And who knows, that may get the ball rolling to something hopefully and prayerfully even greater than the Meals on Wheels. Who knows? But somebody has got to have their eyes open and their thinker on and get out here and find great programs of work. I know in one of the buses where Shelby worked on that one, we had three little boys. Their mom and daddy were drinking on the weekends. They leave their little boys by themselves. There's the oldest one, less than 9 years old. 9, 8, maybe 7, or even younger. Sherman, Bernard, and Justin. Never will forget the little boys. And their mom would leave. Mom and daddy would leave them. They'd have to bring in their own wood, go out in the woods and scrounge up wood for the fireplace, and they'd have to eat whatever was there. And they knew that they was hungry. And Shelby and some of the rest of them would get together sandwiches, and they would feed those little boys on the back of the bus, keep from embarrassing them. They'd get them on the back of the bus and feed them a meal on Sunday morning. Came Christmas time. You've heard me tell this story before. Come Christmas time, we got them all something Christmas time, a toy and other thing, clothing. But in every one of the Christmas boxes, there's a big old box of Cracker Jacks. And we went down to deliver those boxes. And those little boys, each one of them grabbed that Cracker Jack box and opened it up. For what reason? Not for what your child would want, the little toy inside. But they started filling their mouths full of Cracker Jacks. They were hungry. They're hungry kids in Mobile, Alabama, that we need to find how to minister to these hungry, hungry kids. I know that because Ryan Gallagher, our youth minister in Hamilton, Alabama, he brings a group down, stays in your building here, works in inner city, and they come back with stories that would just break your heart of people that are in need. Somebody's got to get the ball rolling. And then number 7, win the victory over inner conflicts. Have you ever been pulled between two conflicting desires? All of us face battles. The little child in you said, go ahead and eat that second bowl of ice cream. This is acting on your feelings. But the adult person in you says, no, it'll make you fat. You start acting on your thinking. Paul said, what I want to do, I do not, and what I hate, I do. We all have conflicts like that. Ted Burleson, a counselor in Hamilton, a minister there, also has his counseling degree. He said he was counseling this couple that were having financial problems, and they'd been married 10 years, and they're living above their income. He said his first session, he had them to bring all their bills in. They looked at their bills and made out a budget for them. The second session was canceled because the wife said, we're having an alarm system installed. It costs nothing. Ted said, how much is the maintenance fee per month? $48. That's $576 a year. They were having financial problems. The third session was canceled. And she was so excited, said, you know, we're having our 10th wedding anniversary coming up soon, and my husband has found a special deal where we can get a cruise for 10 days for $3,000 apiece. We're going to put it on her credit card, 18% to 21%. You see, somewhere, sometime, somehow, we've got to learn to say no. Say no to selfish spending enough time that it breaks the spending habit and helps us to live within our own means. Make a commitment to a cause greater than your selfish interest and your feelings. Allow me to talk to you just a moment as we close our lesson out, on total commitment. During the winter of 1835 and 1836, no, I wasn't there, but I've read about it. The people of Texas decided to sever relationships with Mexico, and to prevent this, Mexico sent Santa Anna to the Texas settlement of San Antonio. In late 1836, had 2,000 soldiers. And then the people at San Antonio only had 188 fighting men under command of William Travis. They had some heroes there named Jane Bowie and Davy Crockett. The arrival of Santa Anna took the Texans somewhat by surprise, and they retreated to the Alamo, and Travis sent out a messenger with a letter pleading for help, stating, "I shall never surrender or retreat." And the battle began on February the 23rd of 1836, and 10 days later, on March the 5th, the Texans could not return fire because they were out of ammunition. So this convinced Santa Anna that the Alamo could be taken, and during the night they put ladders up against the side of the Alamo where they would assault the next morning. In the crisis of that hour, Travis called all of his men together, and he said, "I am not asking for your loyalty. I'm asking for your life. You cannot win the battle, but we can delay the army and save the state." And he took his saber out and drew a line on the floor of the Alamo. And he said, "All who are willing to stay and fight, step across that line." Everyone but two men stepped across the line. Jane Bowie was too ill and weak to walk. And he says, "Men, comrades, pick me up and set me over the line." And they did. And when these brave men ran out of ammunition, they used their muskets as clubs, and they died fighting for the freedom of Texas. Their actions sealed their commitment. There's a price to be paid for feeling better. We've got to act better than we feel. Jesus made it clear, if you're not willing to nail yourself to the cross again and again and again, to act better than you feel, willing to pay the full price for the privilege of following Him, that we'll never be happy here and we'll never have a reward in heaven. Act better than you feel. It's a matter of faith. Paul said, "I die daily." We have to deny self and take up our cross and follow after the Lord. So I challenge you tonight to just do it. Do what's right. Act better than you feel. And it's amazing how much better you will feel if you start acting better than you feel. If you're here tonight and subject to the invitation of our Lord, please come as together we stand as we sing.